Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. We're beginning, as we always do, with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. It's a busy week again in politics. Ken, welcome. Good to talk to you again.
Good morning, Carrie.
We've got the Jeff Sessions testimony tomorrow, which is in some ways, Ken, kind of being positioned as the answer to James Comey's testimony late last week. Do you know yet, Ken, whether it's going to be an open or closed session of testimony?
No, actually, that's the big question mark as of Monday morning. That's the real question everybody's asking, whether it'll be open or closed. Of course, Democrats want it to be open, as at least was half of Comey's testimony. They want to hear what Jeff Sessions had to do with the Russian investigation, what his contacts were with Russian officials. At the same time, they want to know about his conversations with James Comey when, of course, when that famous incident when Comey said that Trump asked the attorney general to leave the room. So there's a lot the Democrats want to hear, and they want to hear it out in the open.
Yeah, you would think that Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, would think there would be a benefit to testifying in open session, wouldn't you, or not?
Well, it depends on what Donald Trump wants, of course. I mean, of course, there was talk about there were so many things that Jeff Sessions has done that has disappointed Donald Trump. Starting with his recusal from the Russian investigation. Trump apparently, according to reports, Trump blames the appointment of Robert Mueller in part on the fact that there was no attorney general to handle this investigation because his attorney general recused himself from the investigation. So there's a lot of interesting dynamic going on between Trump and his attorney general, and a lot has to do with what the president wants.
As I'm sure you noted over the weekend, the president has been spending some time on Twitter. You know, I wonder if his staff has just kind of given up on trying to persuade him not to be on Twitter. What do you think, Ken?
Well, you know, there were some times like when he was in the early stages of his European trip, when he was in Saudi Arabia and Israel, everybody said, well, maybe it's a new Donald. I hear this all the time. Well, maybe it's a new Donald Trump. He's not tweeting. And then, of course, everybody was dying to find out what Trump would tweet during the Comey testimony.
Yeah.
And he didn't do that.
He was going to live tweet. Yeah.
But that reticence didn't last long. By the way, I want to say something that, you know, we always say that, you know, we work in radio. And for the first time in memory, I listened to the entire hearing on the radio because I was on a car ride for 6 hours.
Wow.
And
yeah.
I don't know I didn't see the facial expressions of the senators and Comey himself, but it's fascinating listening to it on the radio. Like when Comey would say something that the president is a liar, or I would hear something from John McCain that made absolutely no sense, or there would be a question from somebody that you knew Comey wouldn't answer. It's amazing what radio does. It's just because in your mind, you just picture what's coming next and what the reactions are and what the whole thing has to do with coming up with the truth. But there's something interesting about listening to it on the radio.
I think that's a really interesting point, Ken, because we were broadcasting the Comey hearing. So I watched it on television because I wasn't on the air. And there is something about the camera zeroing in on certain people that, well, it's a little bit distracting, and maybe it's a little more dramatic. Maybe the view on TV is a little more skewed than the one that you get just listening to the voices.
But when you're thinking and listening and not looking, of course, you're looking ahead at the traffic.
Yeah.
So, but when you're listening, I think you think even more because nobody's telling you what to think.
Yeah.
You're doing it all that on your own.
That's right.
And it's just, the argument for radio was made clear to me during that ride upstate.
What do you make of this back and forth between Comey and Trump about tapes? And what would be, I mean, is the suggestion that President Trump would have activated some kind of recording system in the Oval Office and he would have, because that's where these meetings with Comey were, weren't they?
That's correct. And you know, of course, we all go back to that initial tweet, a Trump tweet where he said, you know, Comey had better hope there were no tapes. And then, of course, on the testimony on Thursday, Comey said, but, you know, oh, Lordy, if there are tapes, bring them on. I mean, we have to hear him. But But we've seen reports in the past that Donald Trump has been known to tape conversations as a businessman with other business leaders. And so it doesn't seem like it would be beyond him to do it. Now, of course, the ultimate downfall of Richard Nixon, here we go again with parallels to Watergate, but the ultimate downfall of Richard Nixon was when those tapes were released. And if, you know, I mean, it's one thing to call somebody a liar, and of course, either President Trump or James Comey is lying. There's no question about it. But to go from lying to obstruction of justice, you need more proof than one person's hearsay or one person's conversation, and certainly the tapes would prove that one way or the other.
When you say that somebody has to be lying, are you talking about the loyalty, pledge? I thought that happened over a dinner. And you know, presumably that wasn't recorded. Why are you certain that one person has to be lying?
Well, if James Comey said, the President of the United States said, I hope you will let this investigation go, and Donald Trump says, I didn't say anything of the kind.
Okay.
Regarding whether Donald Trump is under investigation or not, it just that so much of the conversation that, or so much of the testimony we heard from Comey on Thursday has been refuted by Trump tweets. The fact that he's a liar, the fact that he's a leaker, I think everybody agrees that he is a leaker.
Yeah, he admits to leaking, right.
Yeah, which, of course, is given the Republicans some backbone as well, and given them an argument as well. And also, now the Democrats, now some Republicans are saying we need to investigate Loretta Lynch and what she did to protect Hillary Clinton. So I mean, everybody got something out of it that they wanted, but again, the fact is that if Comey said the president is demanding loyalty and wants the investigation into Michael Flynn dropped, and if Trump says that that didn't happen, that's one person is not telling the truth.
Ken Rudin's with us, as he always is, at the beginning of the week. The political junkie, if you have questions or comments for him, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and I'm on Twitter at CarrieNPR. To Gary in Marvel, Minnesota. Hi, Gary.
Good morning.
Hi. What's your question for Ken?
There are two things I'm curious about. One was immediately after meeting Trump the first time at Trump Towers, Comey went down and started typing his thoughts. And what I'm curious about is what happened at that first meeting that he immediately thought that he needed to put his impressions down on a computer. The other thing that's curious is Attorney General Yates went to Trump twice. And the second time that she went to Trump was the same day that Trump invited Comey into that dinner.
Hmm.
So it's really curious the timing.
Okay, Gary, I think we've got it. So let's take the last one first, Ken, if we could. Sally Yates fired, Gary says, on the same day that Trump invites Comey to the dinner. Do you see any kind of anything to be concerned about there in the timing?
Well, I do, absolutely. And matter of fact, it never occurred to me of that timetable, but that is interesting. And of course, Sally Yates went to the White House to say that Michael Flynn has some serious problems that he should know about. He could be subject to blackmail because of his dealings with foreign interests. And I did not realize it was the same day as that meeting. But as far as the first part, I mean, what Comey said during his testimony, he said, look, I've been in meetings with Presidents Bush and Obama, and I never doubted their veracity, and so I never felt any reason to have to write down my notes. But he knew from the beginning with his conversations with Trump that something was askew, something was wrong, there was inappropriate contact between the president-elect, and then, of course, the president himself, in between January 20th, before and after. And Comey felt that he will need to write this down. Look, there are a lot of things that may rub you the wrong way about Comey. He could be self-righteous. He could be holier than thou. But he seems to be a true straight shooter and somebody who's very, very concerned and dedicated to getting the facts right. And he felt that if something seems wrong with his relationship, with his conversations with the president and the president-elect, he needs to write that down.
It is going to be interesting to hear what Jeff Sessions says about being asked to leave the room, as Comey describes it, right? When the president wants to have a discussion with James Comey, he asks Jeff Sessions and who was it, the chief of staff who was also in that in the room, to leave.
It may have been Rosenstein. I'm not sure exactly who it was. It may have been Rod Rosenstein. I'm not sure. But he asked everyone to clear the room.
Right. And they seemed a little, in the course of the telling, they seem a little reluctant to actually clear the room, as the president has asked.
And then Comey said to Sessions later, do not leave me alone with the president ever again. And this is just inappropriate. And it is inappropriate. I mean, you know, it's unprecedented, the thought of the president of the United States going to the FBI director and asking him to drop something. I mean, and as Republicans pointed out, well, he didn't tell him to drop it. He said, I hope you will let it go. And of course, you know, when the president of the United States says, I hope you'll let it go, it's clear what the president wants you to do.
Although you hear what Speaker Ryan is saying, which is he's new to government. This may be the way he behaved in business. You don't buy that. Why?
Well, I buy it in the fact that maybe Paul Ryan believes it, just as when Donald Trump is talking about taking a lie detector test, testifying under oath, maybe Donald Trump believes everything he's saying. But to say that, well, you know, he's new to this, I mean, we're talking about so many things. We're talking about deceiving people and lying to people and subverting the rule of law. And to say, well, you know, he's new at this is like, wow. I mean, if that's the best defense the Republicans have, then we are in big trouble.
Ken, I'm really curious about what's happening with health care, because we're reading reports that the Senate team of senators and staffers are working behind the scenes to write this bill, and that there may not be any public committee hearings on it. What's happening?
Well, this is very strange, too, and I'm hearing two completely opposite things. I am hearing reports from some Republicans that they really hope that the Senate is going to have its version of the health care bill before the July 4th break. And I'm hearing from other Republican senators, not firsthand, but secondhand, saying that we're not even close to anything. And even if we were close to something, it would be nothing that the House would ever agree to, because once it passes the Senate, then it has to go back to the House. So I am hearing two completely different versions of the progress or lack of same on health care.
There seems to be, if this bill truly is coming together, there seem to be significant changes to Medicaid. Although this is something that I thought the Senate was really concerned about, they're going to get some major pushback on that, aren't they? From even some Republican governors, from, you know, Republicans who voted for the president. That seems like a risky strategy.
Well, I'm hearing that they are going to be much less willing to cut the billions out of Medicaid than what we saw out of the House version. So you're absolutely right about Republican governors. I mean, John Kasich is a perfect example. The Ohio governor, other governor, Republican governors say that our poor, I mean, sometimes when you deal with health care and you're a governor, it's not a Republican way or a Democratic way. It's the governor's way to make sure that everybody is covered. And so when you have people disenfranchised or unemployed because of major cuts in Medicaid, that is a significant thing for a governor to deal with. And so there are a lot of Republican governors who are pressuring Republican senators, look, this is not about politics. It's not about loyalty to Trump. It's about loyalty to the people who sent us to office. So I'm hearing for that Republican senators and Republican House members are far from being on the same page on what to do about Medicaid.
Okay, so Sherry is tweeting, wondering if you think the Senate health care vote is going to happen or when you think it's going to happen. It sounds like you're not sure.
I don't think it. I can't see how it's possible to happen before July 4th. But you know, I probably said the same thing about the first House bill after it didn't get enough votes, and then it did go for a full vote. But again, there was less pressure on the House to do anything. All they had to do was pass something, let it go to the Senate, and then let the Senate worry about it. But I think the Senate is the adults in the room, and I think they're going to take much more time deliberating over it rather than the next couple of weeks. But as with everything else, I could be proven wrong again.
Sandy tweets, Ken, here real quick. She's curious about what the VP, Vice President Pence's role is in all this. And Sandy adds, I think he knew about Flynn, et cetera.
He was the head of the vetting. He was the head of the transition team. And people say, well, one of the reasons Flynn had to go is because he lied to Pence. But other people who are critical of Pence saying, look, this guy knew him. He's the guy who vetted him. He was the head of the transition. Pence is just as culpable, you know. And they say, well, if Trump is impeached and Pence is impeached, then we get rid of Paul Ryan, and then we get rid of the Senate pro tem, and then you go down to Kiefer Sutherland, you know, down to the designated survivor. But it's just remarkable how everybody's, if you believe in conspiracy theories, everybody's part of it.
Have you noticed what's been missing from our conversation today?
The voice of the week?
The mystery newsmaker. And I threw it out, Ken. I threw it out so that I could ask you about the Virginia primary and the Georgia House seat election. Can you talk to me real fast about why they're meaningful?
They're very meaningful. Tomorrow is the primaries for governor in Virginia, and it's interesting to state that Hillary Clinton won by 5 points. Both Democrats, the Lieutenant Governor Ralph Northam and the former Congressman Tom Perriello, are rabidly anti-Trump. Northam, there's a commercial, you hear Ralph Northam saying that Trump is a narcissistic maniac. He says it's the Lieutenant Governor
of
the state. And they're really running anti-Trump. In Georgia, it's a different case. The Democrats could win a seat. This is Newt Gingrich's old House seat. They could win it. The election is June 20th. But, of course, this is a general election, not a Democratic primary. But it's a district that Trump barely won in 2016. And if the Democrats win it, you know, they'll point to Watergate saying this will be the beginning of the end. That's a premature conclusion. But that is a big one, June 20th. In Georgia's 6th District.
Ken, a pleasure, and I'll chat with you next Monday. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary.
Looking for a new podcast? I'm Tracy Mumford, a producer for NPR News. I'm part of the team working on 74 Seconds. It's a new podcast that looks at the shooting death of Philando Castile by Officer Geronimo Yanez. It happened last summer in Falcon Heights, Minnesota. Yanez is now facing charges in Castile's death. 74 Seconds looks at what happened that night and what happens now when a police officer goes on trial. Reporters John Collins and Reham Fashir will walk you through this case as it unfolds. It's a story about race, policing, and justice in America. Subscribe to 74 Seconds wherever you get your podcasts.